Coming up, got a loaded episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. I brought on Legend of Winning to talk about some of our hot and mild NBA season predictions. Then I brought on Lakers rookie Dalton Connect. And then we opened up the mailbag with some of your questions and predictions about this upcoming season. All that coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today for our season predictions episode is Legend of Winning. Lo, what's going on today, man?
How you doing, man? Thank you for having me on. I'm doing really, really great. Happy that the NBA season is finally back because pretty short slash long offseason, to be honest with you.
It was a long offseason. At least we had the Olympics to hold us over, though. I mean, that helps split it up, right?
Yeah. No, that helped it pretty immensely, but that gap in between was pretty bad.
I know the summers do go long. It reminds me of like being a kid, like the school year ends, summer vacation, like it's a good time. It goes by quick, but sometimes it feels long. It's like when football season used to start and I was like, oh damn, school year's coming right now. With NBA season, I'm seeing on your shirt right now something from the past. You got Draymond Green choking out Rudy Gobert in your shirt. I think I'm starting to regret inviting you on the show today with this jersey over.
Man, I can't wait for it. These moments are the ones I live for, man. No, these are the moments. These are the moments I really live for. So I can't wait for all that drama and much, much more.
We got a lot coming. We're going to do predictions today. You and I did not talk about anything that we're going to share with each other. We're going to go back and forth with our predictions, our hot predictions, mild predictions, dead ass serious predictions. We'll figure out what we actually have going on here. I want you to start off low with your first prediction for this upcoming season for today's episode.
Okay, I'm going to start off mild. I'm not going to go like too crazy. I'm going to start off very, very mild. Some could say it's a bit hot. I actually think the Orlando Magic will finish as a top three seed in the Eastern Conference.
Top three seed. So with Orlando. So who's getting bumped down in this situation? I assume you still have Boston up there in the top three,
Boston,
right?
I think Boston's obviously the best team in the Eastern Conference and probably still going to be the best team in the NBA. I'm actually pretty high on Milwaukee bouncing back. I think Dame last year, the shooting was kind of off. A little wonky. Some conversation about him not being healthy. But everything else is up in the air for me. I'm not completely sold on a couple of other teams, and I actually kind of wrote that down for some of my hot takes. But Orlando, to me, is like a very, very sneaky good team. Second in defense last year. Offensively is where they kind of middled the pack a little bit lower. And some of that has been answered with KCP, three-point shooting, obviously. When Wendell Carter Jr. is healthy, his three-point shooting will be really, really great. Hopefully Suggs carries over his three-point shooting. But to me, it was the Franz Wagner. And I'm actually a huge Franz Wagner fan. I was actually very disappointed in him last year, the way he shot 28%, I believe, from three. That was uncharacteristic. Preseason games, not really helping out my prediction right now.
0-7.
Yeah, he's 0-7. He's not made a three yet. So that he ain't really helping me out right now. But I do think that like they have a really good chance to bounce back and have, not bounce back, but like improve slowly. And I think a lot of people tend to forget how really, really well pieced together they are. They always get Boston fits as well because of their switchability and versatility in their defensive end. And I think that can really separate them from everyone else, especially if they can get a solid offensive season for Franz.
So I agree with you in terms of Orlando being like a top five or six. Top three might be a little bit much for me unless Franz figures out the jumper. And I wasn't going to mention this as one of my predictions for the season. I have it on the written version on Yahoo Sports, but one of them is Franz Wagner's jumper will become the topic on Orlando this year. And that could be a good thing or a bad thing. It could be a bad thing if the trend continues, because if you look at last season starting in February, the final 30 games of last season, he shot 22.6% from three. In the playoffs, he shot 26.5%. Then he shot only 20% in the Olympics and 0% in the preseason when he was near like 35% for the remainder of his career prior to all of this. Mm-hmm. And he's got great touch near the basket. He's an 80%+ guy from the free throw line. And like you, I love Franz as well. I think he's a great defender. He's got size. He can play make. He can drive. He can attack. He can do literally everything else.
Everything. Literally everything.
Everything. But the three-point shooting, to me, that's like one of those, it's one of those swing skills this year for the Orlando Magic. If you're looking for a team that can, you know, make a surprise run this year, they got the defense. They have the scoring talent. They have Paolo Banchero trending up, but they also need Franz Wagner to trend up. Do you feel like there's some positive indicators for Franz, or is this just kind of like a roll of the dice that someone's going to be able to figure it out?
A lot of it is wishful thinking. I've seen a lot of like him just playing a lot of basketball over a very finite amount of time. The Olympics obviously didn't help that out either. So hopefully like the rhythm just kind of catches up to him and then he'll be able to kind of ride out a good stretch or two. I do think KCP being on there and having just someone at the guard position that's not a non-three-point shooting threat will also just aid out everyone in a general sense. But yeah, you're right. Like I think Wagner does like everything really, really good. And I really caught on to him in his sophomore season. And I was like, wow, like he checks off a lot of boxes offensively. And I was really, really surprised how well he progressed in a very short amount of time. Like you said, defensively, sneaky good defender as well. And I think a lot has to do with the team, but his shooting should not have evaporated to 20 some percent. That to me was crazy.
Could be in his head. It might be mental.
It could be. And if that's back, and as well as like Paolo just continued to progress as a passer and playmaker, I have a hard time believing that like another is like a third team in the Eastern Conference that is clear of them. I don't think that is the case, but that is a bit of a bold prediction though.
Well, because Philly, like they're going to have Embiid missing games. Paul George is going to miss some games as well.
Exactly.
And Miami, I mean, they're good, but not necessarily at that level.
No.
So it's like, you know, if you're going up and down the Eastern Conference, you mentioned the Milwaukee Bucks as another team as well. The Bucks, to me, like this is, you know, my first prediction. Damian Lillard for sure gonna have a bounce back year, right? But
okay,
I think, you know, we have Chris Middleton right now reportedly gonna be out for the opener. You have these young draft picks that have looked like busts so far. Marjon Beauchamp looks like a borderline cuttable guy. Andre Jackson, I really like him, but his cutting ability, his connective passing and screening hasn't really worked out that Bucks offense yet. And then this year's rookies, you got AJ Johnson. They drafted him in the first round, super raw player who played in Australia last year, and Tyler Smith, a forward in the G League, another really raw player as well. My prediction is that Bucks GM John Horst is going to be kicking himself for drafting these young guys instead of going for more NBA ready players. And that Bucks fans are going to be starting to play the blame game here with John Horst, Doc Rivers, because I think the Bucks are going to fall short, not because of the stars, not because of Brooke Lopez being 36 or Middleton whenever he comes back, but because of the back end bench where Boston is stronger there, New York is stronger there, even Orlando for that matter is stronger on the back end of the bench. So I think the Bucks, their GM John Horst is just going to be regretting taking these young raw guys who aren't helping at all right now.
So you don't, because I somewhat feel that the back end, I think that's where you kind of, you give up a lot of the back end help because you have now both Dame and Giannis. So you have like two, probably when they got them, supposedly top 15 players. Who knows where Dame kind of falls in this conversation moving forward. But like, in theory, that's what you're supposed to have. I think the Gary Trent Jr. edition is great. I'm a bit higher on Prince in a more reduced role than he was with the Lakers defensively over the past like year.
Darvin Ham, the assistant.
Darvin, he follows Darvin wherever he goes. In Atlanta, LA, now in Milwaukee. So he's gonna follow him wherever he goes. But he's also gonna get the reps. But I mean also when Middleton was there towards the tail end of last year, entering playoffs, he looked really, really good. I mean for putting into context all the injuries and where he has been positioned at in his career, I'm actually a little higher than you are because I don't think the back end really matters that much. I think you just need like a 6-7 man rotation where you have two players who can play at top 15 statuses with Dame. I agree with you though. Dame bounce back season. But overall though, big picture, yeah, like the Bucks, their depth has gotten really bad. A couple years ago, lost DiVincenzo. That's really hurt them. Their pro perimeter defensively doesn't look the same. You're adding a weak defender on there with Dame as well. There's like a lot of like negative things that go along with it. But if you have, in theory, you have Dame, you have Giannis, like you give up a lot of that depth. That's the reason why I kind of have them pretty solidly at the second, in my opinion.
I think I'm curious about your thoughts on their defense because you had Doc Rivers before preseason turn training camp saying like we're going to do things that we haven't done before and like they were doing more switching and I think with the defensive system, I said this to Haberstroh last week on my pod, I was like, I'm withholding judgment here, but first impressions are, like, I'm iffy on what they're doing defensively. It feels to me like they're just getting away from what worked for so long with that drop coverage, play everything at the rim as much as they were before. And I think that's another one of my hesitations with Milwaukee. Like, I wouldn't rule out that at some point I'm like, yeah, they can take down Boston. But I feel like I want to see it from them before I get to that point.
If they're switching a lot more, because that was kind of the problem with Adrian Griffin early on, where like the Bucks players had to pull him aside and be like, yo, you have Brooke playing at the level. Like, what are we doing right now? Like, you have him way too high, and you could like see it just watching back. And yeah, that's going to be a problem. I think Doc is actually going to be a much bigger problem than a lot of people. I think people are coming to the conclusion that Doc is like not as well versed as a coach he probably should be, especially for a team like this. The switching is all interesting. I think he falls in love with like a lot of lengthy wings that are trying to just move around. And like you said, some of these young guys that they have on the roster, they just don't have the reps yet to be disciplined defenders to go out there and commit to this type of defensive identity. But I still feel like, so defensively, now I don't think they'll ever be as good as they were 2-3 years ago. Like that, like those Jrue Holiday, Giannis, Brook Lopez led defenses with a very strategic, very analytic driven defensive scheme with Coach Bud, those years are done. Like those years are never going to come back, especially with, you know, Brook Lopez getting older as well. But I think defensively, I think Gary Trent Jr. is still fine. I think that Taurean Prince, again, in a regulated role, he's good as well. But I'm not really sold too much on like harping on like the bad, questionable young players who are going to be like 9 through 10 in the rotation. I just don't think that's going to be a problem.
What's your next prediction, Lo?
Let's speed it up a little bit. Actually, we can stay in the East because you can get now. This is going to be a better understanding of how I have everything else in my Eastern Conference. Jalen Brunson is going to be MVP candidate this year. But okay. I do think the Knicks offseason is grossly overrated. I think a lot of people are blowing a lot of things what they did with the Knicks out of proportion. I think OG Anunoby is overpaid. $50 million. Overpaid. He played 50 games last year, 67 games the year before that, 48, 43. He's very rarely available. He's a max, borderline max player, contract-wise, but he's effectively a role player. Josh Hart is already talking about how he doesn't know what his role is, and we're like a week or now a day away from the tip of the season. Mikal Bridges is talking about how his shot is broken. He's been trying to figure that out for the past couple of years, which I was like, that's crazy.
The shot looks ugly, man.
Again, the shot has always looked bad, but now that you've come out and said it, that's kind of crazy. Mitchell Robinson is out until, I believe, January it is. And Karl Anthony Towns is at Billie Eilish concerts watching Timberwolves preseason games. It doesn't even like he wants to be there. So, and in a more serious note, with Karl Anthony Towns, like, I think people tend to forget who Towns was as a defender without Gobert. Like, he was really, really bad. And I think the discourse around Gobert in the NBA community has gotten to the point where they don't really put into a perspective of how much he really does clean up and how Minnesota got away with playing Karl Anthony Towns against Kevin Durant and Nikola Jokic because the backline help is Gobert. Like, he's able to roam around a lot. And having Towns as your backline defender while also having Brunson on the floor is going to be really, really tough to hide both of them at the same time, especially until Mitchell Robinson comes back. And even when, you know, Mitchell Robinson does come back, he's not a Rudy Gobert level defender, but it's going to look really good for Brunson. Like, really, really good. You're going to put the ball in his hands, 3-point shooting every position. I think he is going to have like an MVP caliber season, but I don't know where that kind of leads them off in terms of standings. And I actually think they're going to be big picture. They could be lower than Orlando this year. I think they could be fourth.
I mean, I think it's like when you compare them to some of the other teams like Orlando, I think you can safely say we'll have a top defense. It'll be a top two, top three defensive rating in the league. They'll be dominant most nights on the defensive end. It's about their offense. With the Knicks, there are a lot of ifs. Like, I think you're right about the availability of OG Anunoby. Obviously, they get some guys out right now. Karl Anthony Towns, I would say he's improved individually defensively over the years, but at the same time, it is different when you don't have Rudy Gobert next to you at the five. That's a dramatic difference. Gobert, say what you want about him with his playoff production and how his offensive role is so diminished that sometimes it means his defensive importance is lessened. But the fact is he's a dominant regular season defender. He has 4 defensive player of the years for good reason, because it's a regular season award. But now for Karl Anthony Towns, I do think it's important for them to have that ability to go with a five next to Cat and putting Cat at the four. And right now they just don't have that card to play. And Mitchell Robinson, even when he does come back, he's had injury issues in the past as well. So for the Knicks, there are question marks here. I just think their offensive upside is so massive. Like they could go compete against Boston for the number one offensive rating in the league. I'm with you on Jalen Brunson. I think Cat changes some things with what they can do offensively, especially for Brunson. Brunson really hasn't played with a pick and pop big since he was in Dallas when he had Kristaps Porzingis screening for him and Maxi Kleba as kind of a big forward screening for him. But now it's in this situation with the Knicks where Mikal Bridges, man, like I don't want to read too much into the broken looking jump shot, man. But it looks bad. And the percentages aren't there either. It's not like it just looks bad, but it's still going in. He's shooting below 20% from three-pointers in preseason, and he's admitting that it's broken. And if the guy you invested so much in the future isn't able to effectively space the floor, that changes a lot of what we're talking about when it comes to floor spacing for the Knicks. Are you concerned about Bridges as that big investment they made this offseason prior to Cat?
So that's another part of it, but it's – it's kind of hard with the new CBA and how everything is like being initiated, and you know, Drew Holiday, how many picks was traded for him. So I don't necessarily know what the right price point is for a lot of these players anymore. But like, yeah, they gave up a lot of draft capital to go get him. And in theory, who he's supposed to be, great two-way player, wing, 3-and-D guy with a pretty high upside of which you hope he would be when he was transitioning to his last year from Phoenix, to his first year in Brooklyn. But a lot of that got diminished last year. Really on both sides of the floor. You're hoping in theory that it will come back this upcoming season, but I am kind of concerned because the truth of the matter is the way that a lot of teams are playing, you have to have capable, competent wing defenders on the floor and have them stay out there as many minutes as possible. The only way you can do that is if you also increase their offensive value as well, which for most of these wings are going to be three-point shooters, especially if they're like more complementary pieces. Mikal Bridges, if the shot isn't falling, which it looks very concerning, and as soon as a player, because I think NBA players have like supreme confidence, if the player himself comes out and tells you that my shot is, I don't know what's going on, I've been trying to constantly work on it, and we're like literally days away from the season starting, and like this is news coming out, that is really concerning. I think the DiVincenzo loss is much more concerning than people want to realize. Great on-ball defender, three-point shooting there. You're basically going to replace a lot of those minutes with Josh Hart, who's I don't think has ever shot above 34% throughout his entire career from behind the arc. So even that's going to be a bit questionable, especially if the rotation between him and Mikal is going to be hard. And then OG, who's basically, OG Anunoby is effectively just a corner three-point shooter. He's not above the break. He's not putting the ball on the deck. So it's still going to be a lot. I agree, though. The offensive uptick is, like, supreme at this point. But I don't think that, like Indiana's offensive identity ceiling is really high. And I don't think anybody would, like, confidently claim where they're going to be at in this upcoming season.
All right, I got a nerdy stat one for this next one. In the NBA, for the first time in league history, the percentage of shots taken from the floor will exceed 40% for three-pointers taken. So three-point rate will exceed 40% this coming season. Last year, it was 39.5%. But 5 years ago, in the 2021 season, it was 39.2%. So things kind of plateaued this decade after it was just constantly ascending for many years. But I think this is the year it's going to pop over 40%, in part because in preseason, teams attempted 44.1% of their shots from three. 44.1% of shots taken were from beyond the arc. And the Celtics in preseason were up over 50%. They could increase their rate this year. I think this year we're going to see many more teams up over 40%. You look at teams in this preseason, the Hornets, they hired Charles Lee, who is an assistant with Boston. They went up 10 percentage points. They were at 49%. The Hawks are up to 49%. The Warriors are up to 49%. The Grizzlies are taking more. With Budenholzer, the Suns are taking close to 50% as well. So you got a lot of teams in the NBA that are taking more threes. And I just think we're going to hit over 40%. Whether that's good or bad in terms of quality of league, that, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I think we're getting to a point it's a bit too much.
I think it's bad.
Yeah, you think so too?
Yeah, I think it's bad. Do you think, because the with a lot of preseason, a lot of the players that are getting a bit more minutes are like into the bench players who are just trying to crack the rotation, trying to find their identity. And so a lot of those players, they believe like, oh, the best thing I can provide to this team is 3-point shooting. So I'm going to prove to the, you know, I hope not. I feel like we are getting to the point where I'm a Laker fan. I hear JJ Redick constantly saying, we need to shoot more threes, more threes, more threes. And in theory, I understand it. I get it. But I also think that there's just more ways to win basketball games. And I think that has been proven pretty consistently over the past 4 to 5 years now. And I think that, like, especially with Redick and the Lakers, pushing an identity that just doesn't make any sense. Like, Rui, I think, is a really, really great post player, mid-range shooter. Like, that's who he is as a player. Even if the analytics don't point in a direction, that's the most valuable thing. Telling him and D'Lo and Reed to just shoot more threes for the sake of just shooting more threes, and even LeBron, I think it is taking away from the essence of, like, certain players' identities. Some teams are just going to do it just because they have no other way to compete with other teams because they don't have the talent to do so. But everyone shouldn't be – if we get a 40%, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough.
I mean, it is a bit much. And, like, it feels like, I mean, look, teams get to those shots differently. Like, you have teams playing different systems. But when the results are the same, sometimes it can just feel a bit stale while watching the, like, some of these teams go back and forth where it's almost half their shots are three-pointers. Like, I think the variety is why, you know, like, some of these bigs who have, you know, are shining in the NBA this decade, Giannis and Jokic, and why guys like Edie coming into the NBA right now with their low post style, it's like a breath of fresh air to have some of those types of players. But also nowadays, like, bigs are back. Like, there's so many great bigs in today's NBA, but bigs are back, but they're modernized. Bigs are shooting threes now too. Like, even the Grizzlies had Edie attempt 4 3-pointers in preseason. Yeah. He didn't make any of them, but they're going to try to have Edie be like Brook Lopez and space the floor. It's just like DeAndre Ayton shooting threes this year in preseason. Onyeka Okongwu for the Hawks is now shooting threes more frequently. Donovan Clingan, rookie with the Blazers, shooting threes. Like, there's a lot of bigs. Bam Adebayo with the Heat shooting threes. Like, it's just that's just the way it is nowadays. And that's not going to change anytime soon unless there's rule changes by the NBA.
Which I think I actually genuinely believe Adam Silver is afraid to change rules. That might be a hot take, actually. I think Adam Silver, like, the NBA, I think everyone knows that the product is, like, heading in a direction where it's like we're really pushing the bounds of, like, just repetitive play, and understandably so. But very similar things were happening in the late 90s where it was like slow pace, we're dumping it in, taking advantage of illegal defense and manipulating the hell out of the referees as much as we can, and just slowing down the pace. And they deemed it like, this is boring basketball, this is unnecessary, we need to change it. I think we are heading, I do agree that we're heading in that direction of, like, it's just repetitive 3-point shooting. Like, we have to change it a little bit. They should actually put a illegal offensive rule where a player just can't stand in a corner. He can't stand in one place for any extended period of time. Like, a three in a key, three in a corner.
Yeah. I'd like to see the NBA try out some of this stuff in the G League. Like, just go full on experimentation. They already use it with some minor changes, but I'd like to see some major extreme ones try there. What's your next prediction, though?
Next prediction. Since you brought up the Memphis Grizzlies, I'm going to say that. Memphis Grizzlies won't make the play-in. They're not going to make the playoffs. Won't make the play-in. I've spoken to so many people about the Memphis Grizzlies. Smart people. People I feel like, hey, if I have, like, a question or concern and I feel like I'm doing something wrong here, I'll come to you and I'll ask it. I'll even ask you. But every single time people explain to me why the Grizzlies are supposed to be good, I just think to myself, like, bro, you're overthinking it. Like, they have no 3-point shooting. They're expecting Zach Edey to probably play major minutes alongside Triple J in some capacity, regardless of their starter coming off the bench. Marcus Smart is regressed as a 3-point shooter. Never really was the greatest either himself. Your 2 3-point shooters are basically Desmond Bane and Luke Kennard. Luke Kennard can't play more than 25 minutes on a night-to-night basis because he's not a defender nor a passer. He doesn't really provide much of anything outside of 3-point shooting. And in Triple J, I was really high on him 2 years ago. I'm off of him. Last year, I think they employed 33 players in the Memphis Grizzlies. There was only 2 players that were taller than him. he still finished only 5 rebounds. I don't know how that's even possible, but like that's effectively who he is as a player, and I have to accept it. People are very high on like who they were before when Ja was there 2 years ago, what it looked like and how they were a 50-someone team in that Western Conference, and they were at second or third seed. But since then, Houston has gotten significantly better. I think OKC was like a 24-win team at that time. The Lakers are perceived to be better as well. Who else? It's a couple of teams that have just been significant. The Western Conference is just better. And I think that this team is worse than it was 2 years ago because there isn't a Steven Adams here who provided them some offensive value with his offensive rebounding. And also, again, Marcus Smart, really good player, solid. But I don't think he's as good as a defender as he once was, nor as good as what's our guy's name who plays in Houston now that used to play for
Dylan Brooks.
Dylan Brooks. He's not as good as a defender Brooks was 2 years ago either. So but the West is just very competitive. I don't see how you can just squeeze in another 48 win team in the Western Conference to make the playoffs, because I think that's the bar that has been set now.
I just, maybe I'm putting too much into Edie, but I think that's crazy. Yes. In part because of Edie. That's why I think Edie can come in and do a lot of the Steven Adams thing. He's a great screener. He can roll. He can catch lobs. He can post up. And he's just so big. I have the same questions about Jaren Jackson as you do on offense. Like I think people think about Jaren Jackson as a shooter because he shoots, but he's never been a good shooter. Like he's been a 35-36% guy, I think, in his best season off the top of my head, but he's typically below or near 30% from three. His touch doesn't translate. But on defense, he's nasty. Edie's going to be held. Edie's going to provide the rebounding. To me, it's really just simply a question of, does Ja Morant stay on the floor or not? And if Ja stays on the floor, I think they're going to be good enough to be top 6, top 7. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be a finals team. I don't think they are unless everything clicks right, but that's way too many ifs when you stack them up against the rest of the Western Conference. But ultimately, I think they're going to be good enough to make the playoffs. Like, who is there any other team that you have in mind that you think, because there's someone good is going to miss the playoffs in the Western Conference.
Because this is going to have to be.
Yeah. It has to be. Like, is there any other team that you feel like is going to miss the playoffs in the West this year that people aren't thinking about?
I want to say this real quick. From 0 to 3 feet, that is the only place where Jaren Jackson Jr. shoots above 45% from the field. From 0 to 3 feet. That is the only place on the floor. I just, like, I understand what you're saying. And I'm be honest, you gave me the exact same answer that everyone gave me, which is, hey, man, Edie's big. Like, you can't teach height. And I'm like, man, like, I feel like that's such a 1997 answer for a player. But I hear what you're saying. And also, I've done this game. There's a game called, like, 1230, which is, throughout the NBA season, there's 1,230 wins allocated to all 30 teams. You should play the game at some point. It's there's not enough wins to go around for there to be like 10 or 11 48 win teams. I think Houston is going to be slightly better than people anticipated. But I guess if the team that's going to knock out of the playoffs that's in the Western Conference last year were the Clippers, and I think they're probably going to fall just by the habit of not having players. But also, I'm pretty high on the Warriors. I've seen the Warriors in the preseason. I'm like, oh, wow. So they're still good. Like, they're not going to miss Klay Thompson. Buddy Hield is a perfect replacement. Like, everything looks good. So I don't know why they wouldn't improve with improved Kuminga. Draymond hopefully keeps his hands to himself. And then Trace looks really good as well. It's okay. Really and truly, we should have an over and under on how many games Draymond gets suspended this year, because it's inevitable. But even if I feel like Draymond has like a couple of incidences, I feel like the Warriors last year was a lot of, you know, rolling of the dice and trying to figure out where they were with some of these young players. They found out where they were with Kuminga, B-Pods, and Trace. Those are three role players, complementary pieces that fit at the guard, wing, and center position. These are all players that they need depth and help at. And I don't know, I feel like the Warriors kind of fill the void of wherever the Clippers were at. And I feel like everyone else makes the playoffs as they normally would have made the playoffs.
A reminder to listeners to please subscribe to the Kevin O'Connor Show if you haven't done so already. It really does help out, and give us a 5-star rating. You did get us to 200 ratings on Spotify. That really does help a lot. Let's get the 150 on Apple. That would help a lot.
Oh.
All right, Lo, we're talking about some Western Conference teams here. You mentioned the Clippers. I think, you know, Kawhi Leonard out indefinitely to start the year. It's only going to be a matter of time until we're talking about that three-year, $150 million deal as an albatross contract. I worry about the Clippers. I think it could get ugly in their new arena this year. But a team that people seem split on is the Sacramento Kings. They add DeMar DeRozan, who I love DeRozan. I think DeRozan is still one of the better bucket getters in the entire NBA. But De'Aaron Fox, last week, he was talking about not signing his extension. And he said if we were contending for a championship, he wants to wait to see if they contend like Tatum did. He wants to see where we're at, he said. Look, it's not in his best interest to sign right now. It would make sense to wait. But I think there could be something there, and that if the Kings are in the play-in conversation again by midseason, De'Aaron Fox is going to become a trade target. That's my prediction for the Kings this year, that we're talking about. Are the Spurs going to go after De'Aaron Fox? Are the Magic going to go out and try to get De'Aaron Fox? Are the Heat going to try to go out and get De'Aaron Fox? I think that'll be a conversation come February. It doesn't mean a trade will happen, but I think that'll be a thing in February, and it could carry into the offseason.
So Barnes, they lost Barnes, which I think is bigger than people realize. He was a quality corner shooter, kind of floor spacer, bigger body. You can play the four a little bit more than I and give you a little bit more value, I think, than DeRozan is going to be able to give you on the board.
A lot of pressure on Keegan Murray to step up with Barnes out as well.
I think that they've kind of molded him into that situation to kind of be prepared for this opportunity. Last year, Kevin Huerter got hurt, but even before he got hurt, he was already in a doghouse with Mike Brown, in and out of lineups, not really getting consistent minutes. The three-point shot wasn't consistently falling as it probably was in previous years either. Trey Lyles, I'm actually a fan of Trey Lyles. I think he's actually a really good piece at that five coming off of the bench, floor spacer, even if he does get some more running minutes in the starting lineup next to Sabonis. I think that would be great. I am more concerned with DeRozan fit on the roster. This is a team that like thrived in just like up and down pace, east and west movement, a lot of ball movement, a lot of 3-point shooting around Sabonis and Fox. That really looks great. Fox last year took, in my opinion, probably too many threes, and it took away a lot of his value with the rim pressure. This is like going back to the conversation we had before. That's just the new NBA where people are just shooting too many threes, and I think that just takes away from the identity. DeRozan, though, is like an interesting piece where I feel like we're like, I'm actually on the opposite end where I feel like they're going to more so regret the DeRozan. And I think they should probably even try to throw him on a bench because I just don't see how it makes sense. I think they should really go all in on the Keegan Murray, Trey Lyles movement. I didn't even think, though, about saying that De'Aaron Fox would be a trade asset anytime soon, but that is possible. It pointed into the direction I felt like he was saying, I know we're not going to be able to compete just yet, but if we can move in the right direction, I'm willing to extend. That's how I kind of read it. And I've read some that him and DeRozan are on the same page. And I think he was pretty high on the addition for DeRozan. So I always felt like he was just doing it for the sense of just like financially would make more sense for me to just wait another year in that capacity. But
that could be
that
what
is
it
very
is.
Interesting.
Could That's be what it is. But like, is it possible that the Kings are thinking to themselves as well on their end, is he really a $50, $60 million point guard? Or are we better off flipping him for either like some combination of players and picks and trying to shuffle this around DeRozan and Sabonis and Keon Ellis in the backcourt, who's a great defensive player? They drafted Devin Carter, who's going to be a really two-way guard once he gets back on the floor. Is it possible that the Kings could look at Fox as their best asset in order to maximize this roster? Because I think it could go both ways. Like that's kind of my perception here. It's not that King, like Fox alone would be saying, I'm out, like I don't want to be here anymore. But also it could be that the Kings are like, wait a second. Maybe we should look around and figure out a way to shuffle the deck here.
One thing I've learned about Sacramento is that I think that the people at the top, ownership, and in particular, like people who are face of the franchise, is very prideful people, right? They're going to try to justify any decision that they ever make, ever. They made the commitment to trade Tyrese Halliburton and go full-fledged with De'Aaron Fox. Even if in their heart of hearts they do not believe that he's worth $50, $60 million, they're going to pay him $50, $60 million. Like, they, I think they are committed to the idea that we cannot lose Tyrese and he's out in Indiana looking amazing when he is healthy. And then we also turn around and decide they were also going to lose or move off from De'Aaron Fox as well. And I'm not anywhere near close as high on Sabonis as a lot of people are. I just think that, like, unless you're, like, peaking at Jokic level, having the five that isn't, like, a really great rim protector or at least, like, a decent one is really hard to win with, which is why I'm not that high on Towns, like I said earlier. So I think they just have to, like, move forward with the idea of, like, we've committed to this. This duo Fox and Sabonis. We traded Tyrese for Sabonis. This is what we want. This is how we're going to build it. And we're going to do it even if it doesn't make the most sound sense out there. But we'll commit $50 million to him. And I think that's why I believe that sooner than later, the DeRozan to the bench conversations are going to make more sense more than anything else. Because like it just doesn't, like everything else doesn't, it just doesn't make any sense with the rest of the roster. But that is a team that also could be in a playing, possibly miss the playing mm-hmm. conversation as well. I looked at that also in the Western Conference.
What else you got next, Lo?
So you went, you kind of upped the notch a little bit with the trade conversation. We can stay out West too. So during the offseason, one of the most interesting, I don't know why people, I know people didn't talk about this in my opinion, but Brooklyn is blowing it up. So they're moving, not blowing up, they're moving off of more pieces, right? Move Mikal Bridges, and for whatever reason, Houston, out of nowhere, said, hey, man, we will give you your picks back for Phoenix's picks that they got from the Kevin Durant trade from like last year. That, to me, was the most interesting thing I've ever seen in my life. If you're Houston, you're looking at a Brooklyn Nets team that is quite literally telling you that they're trying to punt the season away. Those picks are probably going to be as valuable as they're ever going to be at this moment. And you traded them for Phoenix Suns picks, which, in theory, the Suns are a team that are trying to be in the playoffs at bare minimum. So these picks don't have that much value. Even if KD retires and goes on, or he regresses pretty immensely over the next like year or two, Devin Booker is still in his prime. Like, he's still looking really good. Why would you even dare trade away Brooklyn Nets picks, especially in this draft class, for Phoenix Suns picks? Unless you have an indicator that something's going on in Phoenix. Like, that is the only way. I'm under the influence that Harden and Kevin Durant are talking, and they're trying to get back to Houston, man. Houston. Also, I want to be clear. I do think that there is an ongoing conversation that's happening behind the scenes. Also, KD didn't sign his extension either. They're saying they want to get him on a 2-year. I think a lot of this stuff is just talk. It's too many things that are going into place that are just so happen to be coincidental for me not to believe that everyone in the league is kind of looking at Phoenix like it's this is it. Like, this is the last year, and Houston is preparing for it. And I think they have some inkling of something is going to happen with KD.
So you're saying not just KD, but Harden as well.
I think Harden has already shipped it off. He's mailed it off. He's like, I just need my $35 million. I just need to sign the 2 years with the Clippers, get my money. And then in the middle of this season, I'm going to do what I always do, which is get my way. I'm going to do it. Everything is like setting up for Harden to be like, I need to get out of here ASAP. And if you are the Clippers.
Oh, no, because he's the only one. Kawhi's
the only one.
So it's like going to be the Harden show for a while.
Russ left, PG left, Kawhi ain't going to be healthy. It's Harden. The Clippers look like a 2017 Houston Rockets roster right now with Harden, wings, and a big who's going to set screen and roll. It's and you're asking what 35-year-old Harden to look like he was when he was 25. Like, that's effectively what's going on right now. And I just think that Harden is at a point in his career where he clearly doesn't want to do that anymore. I don't even think he has the physical capability of doing that for any extended period of time. And everything, obviously, with in the Clippers, I mean, I think if you had locked somebody up in a room with the front office and said, hey, would you trade any of these players for draft picks? They would say absolutely in a heartbeat. So I think that is also on the table as well. I think both of them, both of them going to Houston. Both of them.
And that would suddenly make Houston a finals contender. Even just KD, I think, would really lift them up in many different ways on that roster because they have all the supporting pieces. Yeah. They just don't have the stars. Like, that's what they're missing. I think it's a lot of ifs, but the fact is that it wasn't that long ago that Woj did say the Rockets made a call on Kevin Durant.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Woj did put that out there this summer around draft time. Mm-hmm. So, like, we know that they at least have had discussions that Houston has expressed interest. And we know James Harden's history. And we also know, like, didn't Houston also have reported interests and bring Harden back? They opted not to.
That was also a conversation as well, yes.
But it was at least a thought on their mind.
Yes. So, and even with the Fran Van Vliet contract, I've always thought that, obviously, they had to sign Van Vliet to meet the threshold to just spend a certain amount of money.
Very tradable contract.
But now it's a very, extremely tradable contract. You unload $40-plus million within just one player alone. It's too much coincidental things that are happening in Houston right now that makes me believe that they are very clearly trying to make a big splash coming soon. I think the KD conversation just right now makes the most sense, especially if Phoenix is like spiraling, the three-point shooting isn't falling as much, the defense is still middling to like being bad. I think Frank Vogel doesn't get enough credit for making that, I believe, like an above-average defensive unit last year with Nurkic anchoring at the five and Durant having to still do like KD things defensively, which I think he's underrated on. But there's too many coincidental things in Houston that's going on right now for me not to believe that they're trying to make a massive splash with a certain player.
How bad do you think it needs to be for the Suns for them to actually pull the trigger on a KD deal this season? And the reason why I ask that is because I don't think the Suns are going to be bad. I think the Suns are going to be in the playoffs. I think they're going to be a really competitive team. I think they're going to be much better this year. I love their offseason additions, the way they bolstered the team with limited room, limited assets. I think they did a really good job at that. I like their rookie, Ryan Dunnelot. He's a great defensive player. His shot looks better offensively. Their center spot, big questions there with Nurkic. You might be relying on a rookie, Oso Igodoro. Plumlee stinks. Like, the center spot is a real concern there. So, but like, if they're the sixth seed in February, and the Rockets are saying, hey, we'll give you all of your picks back and you'll have all your flexibility back. Just start building around Devin Booker for the future. This is your this is your way out. Is that really enough for Ishbia and the Suns to say, okay, screw it. Like, we're not going to go for it anymore. We're not going to roll the dice and see if we can win it all. I just don't know, like, what level of, you know, underwhelming do the Suns need to be this year?
Well, Nurkic's another big that's shooting threes out of nowhere. I don't know how that's gonna work.
He's missing a lot of threes
and missing quite a bit. But I think that the floor for Phoenix is probably a little too high for them to panic, but I don't know if it's too high for KD to panic. Like, I think KD is like smart enough to kind of realize, like, hey, like, Dallas still looks great. Denver looks great. OKC looks borderline unbeatable. Minnesota is also really, really good. Like, you can just list off like four or five teams that are not just going to be better, but like in any situation, I don't think anybody believes that Phoenix could even beat any of these teams either. Like, they're just at a significant disadvantage. And I love Tyus Jones, but I think there's a reason why he's a backup instead of a starter. Like, I think that there is actual real reason behind that. And Budenholzer's great, but I think that if they get to like the sixth seed, I still think that's enough for KD to be like, I don't like it here. Like, I don't want to be here. I don't really see this really mapping out and planning out. Y'all are still taxing me to play extensive minutes and do a lot of things defensively that I just don't think I should have to do at this point in my career anymore. And honestly, I think a mid-year, an average third option year from Bradley Beal could really push things a little bit more forward than I think a lot of people are anticipating. Because I don't think Bradley Beal, yikes.
It's one of the least tradable contracts in the NBA. It is the least tradable contract in the NBA. It's got the no trade clause still attached to it. Let's do some quick hitters to close the podcast today, Lo. On my list, I got Lonzo Ball gets traded to a contender. I think Lonzo is going to be good enough with an expiring contract that some team out there is going to make an offer that's acceptable enough to the Bulls to decide, hey, we got Giddy, we got Cody White in the backcourt, we got Matis Buzelis as a rookie. Like, they have enough other guys, with especially Kobe White, that I think the Bulls are going to say, let's get something for Lonzo before he leaves in free agency.
No argument there. I didn't think that's much of a bold take, but I do think whoever gets Lonzo, who also gets like Cam Johnson out in Brooklyn, I think there's quite a bit of teams that are trying to just tank and have quality rotation players, they could certainly be the difference maker. Chicago has had like two or three of these players. They let Caruso go for practically nothing.
Even Vooch, too.
I think Vooch could be a good addition to a lot of teams. I have Anthony Davis having the best season of his career, especially offensively.
Because he's shooting threes.
No. The three-point shooting is bad.
No.
I was critical of J.J. Redick earlier on, but I had to say this. What he's done offensively with the sets that he's done with them playing at the elbow, a lot of horns action, a lot of blind pig. There's like quite a few actions that they run now that they just weren't running last year. Like I hated watching certain networks try to explain to us why Darvin Ham was an adequate coach because they made it to the conference finals. I'm like, oh my God, like that doesn't mean that he's an adequate coach. Like he's just, there's so many things he was doing wrong. And J.J. Redick is quickly implementing a lot of motion, off-ball movement in that offense that is going to make Anthony Davis look significantly better, especially with his passing. Last year, towards the tail end of the year, AD was averaging like 4 or 5 assists. I think I can carry over. And his jump shot shooting was also really, really good towards the tail end of last year as well. Not good enough to be attempting 5 threes, but still good enough to where it can make him a bit more dynamic. And as soon as they can come to the conclusion of actually getting a 5 next to him, I think that AD will be back into top 5 conversations very clearly, you know, the best year of his career on both sides of the floor.
I like that one. I think with AD, just, I mean, the shooting's part of it, but like it is good to at least see him shooting threes. I know JJ had hinted previously that he had a theory on how he could fix AD's jumper. It looks much better.
Yeah, it does.
Shots are going in. I mean, mechanically, it looks very similar, but it's good to see that progress. We saw news that the Pelicans signed Trey Murphy to a 4-year, $112 million extension on Monday morning. Great news for them. They need shooting. They need to make the commitment there. I just think they're going to have to make a trade. They have to address the center position. They went super cheap at the center spot. They've invested $5.7 million into their centers this year. Daniel Tice, they have a Bosnian draft and stash, Carlo Matkovic, and then they have a rookie out of Baylor, Missy.
You don't like the Herb Jones rim protection? You don't like that? When I heard that news, I thought that was fake. Actually, I thought that was fake.
It looked like Sentinel, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, whoa, what? Because I could have sworn, like, oh man, small ball 5 with Zion giving some protection. Nah, Herb Jones. Wow, that's great.
And the thing, I mean, look, they need a center, and they also need to add more shooting. And so Trey Murphy, you got to get him as many minutes as you possibly can. They have to find a way to flip Brandon Ingram and or CJ McCollum and get better at the center spot and just add more shooting around Zion Williamson. And I think they will make a trade at some point. Maybe go get Jared Allen for Brandon Ingram with Cleveland, something like that.
Yep. I'm going to go back with the Bulls. I think Zach LaVine's going to have a bounce back season. I think a lot of people have like woefully underrated who he was as a player. The money, of course, attached to him is what a lot of people are kind of hesitant on, especially with the injury history. But I mean, before he got injured, he was playing around DeMar DeRozan and Vucevic, probably not the most optimal offensive situation. And 70% at the basket, consistent 45 to 40, a little bit higher from mid, competent, more than competent 3-point shooter, high clip, 38, 37% shooter as well. The passing and playmaking is probably the thing that consistently separates him from a lot of other two guards. D. Mitch, even Devin Booker has grown in those capacities. But I think a lot of people were like, I was kind of thrown back where I was like, oh man, people were like, they were willing to throw Paul George that type of money. But like Zach LaVine, I think when he's healthy, he's not that far removed from where PG is at himself. He's younger. You get a bigger window with him also. I think just a lot of people are like just grossly underrating who Zach LaVine is.
I like that one. I mean, I think LaVine, when he's healthy, he's a solid player. And he's gotten better defensively since early in his career when he was a total negative. He's at least sometimes average at this point. We get also breaking news. While we're recording, Lo.
Oh, wow.
Shams Charania says the Houston Rockets have agreed to a 3-year, $106 million rookie contract extension with Jalen Green. That just broke.
Wow.
Probably while you were in the middle of
talking. While we're in the middle of saying it. Wow. That's crazy.
Wow. Man. So that doesn't
change the Sengun.
That also doesn't change your whole perception of what they could do with their picks. Like they don't.
That is also true.
If anything, maybe now they say, "Well, we can't trade Jalen Green. Sorry,
yeah,
like he can't be traded." But they could still move other salaries and deals.
Very easy.
They could still move Amen Thompson as a young player with value if they wanted to. They don't have to move Jalen Green.
Also, specifically a 3-year deal, not even a full four.
Yes,
just 3-year, $106 million.
Yep,
that's a very, very interesting. That's
two plus one. So there's an option on the final
year. Oh, it's an option. No, not, wow.
Exactly.
If it's not tradable this year, it definitely looks tradable in another year.
100%.
Definitely tradable in a year, too. So there's that.
I know. Are you a believer in Jalen Green?
Maybe not on that team. I don't like the mixture between him and Sengun. I think that, especially if you're going to run Sengun as a pseudo Jokic, I think that Jalen Green kind of doesn't fit the whole Jamal Murray scene. But I did like what I saw out of him towards the tail end last year.
He 25 really, points per game.
Right. He was very explosive, get down to the basket, nice quick handle, very decisive when he is attacking. I think there's a lot of teams that would love to have him. And his ceiling, I do think, is really, really high. I just don't think that it's the highest next to Sengun in particular. I do think that probably a bit more three-point shooting big, a bit more pick and pop, a bit more even athletic than Sengun as well. But Sengun is in the vein of Jokic, Sabonis. Like I just don't think that those two type of guards fit well with one another.
Last couple of things. What's your finals prediction?
Boston and OKC. I'll just play it safe. I won't give too bold. I'm with
you. I got Boston over OKC. So you have them repeating.
I have Boston repeating. I'm so like perplexed with Boston, the conversations that people have with them. On one hand, I feel like the Jaylen Brown convos go like completely left.
Just you because have him in your top 25.
No, I don't think that he is. And people try to chastise me for that as well. I'm like, man, I get it. He won finals MVP. They won a championship, but like, he's not the passing playmaker. He's not that great of an off-ball defender either. Like, he just doesn't provide enough value to be a top 25 player. And also the conversations around them all playoffs and wanting to win a championship, weak championship, easy run, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that really just takes away from like how good they are. They are really, really, really good. Net rating through the roof last year. I think they had like a top five net rating of the last like 30, 40 years of all champions. And they somehow sustain really good value in the postseason without Porzingis, Tatum having the worst shooting stretch of his entire career, and even Jaylen Brown not looking the greatest either. And yet they still dominated the entire field pretty convincingly, even in the finals where a bit more stiffer competition with Luka and Kyrie still dominated them pretty convincingly while Tatum, Brown, and Porzingis wasn't even there. I feel like that should be more of a testament of how good they are versus like trying to discredit them. And I think that's been a bit too loud. People are going to be surprised. I think they're going to be a 61 team again.
I think they're going to win 60 plus again too. And I think they're going to go back to back. I mean, I questioned them last year. I was wrong about them, but they brought everybody back. I think Tatum could be even better this year. Brown, his handle looks even a little bit better in preseason. Those guys are still young, man. Like they could get even better. Yeah. They could get better. And last thing, what's your Lakers prediction? You said you're a Lakers fan.
Oh, man.
I'll
give you the most optimistic. I'll give you very Laker delusional. 50 wins, conference finals appearance. And that's with the caveat that they actually do trade D'Lo, potentially Rui as well, in draft capital. You'll get someone like Cam, maybe Jakob Poeltl to put next to AD.
How about Lonzo? Bring back Lonzo for D'Lo.
If Lonzo was there as well, I think Lonzo would also be a great addition. But they have to make a trade. They have to get better on their perimeter defensively. And if AD's shot is falling, which I'm hoping as well, if that shot is falling, then a five also would do wonders for that team defensively. But I am sold on J.J. Redick as an offensive mind. I think that offense he's put around him is really, really great. I still have to see what LeBron looks like in that offense because he didn't really play much preseason minutes. So I want to see that first. But more or less, everyone else was moving. They looked great when they had the minutes. The shots were there, maybe not falling, but they still were getting quality looks pretty consistently. And Man, Dalton Connect, what a hell of a preseason he had as well. But I am sold on
points,
them.
Man.
35 points, hell of a preseason. But I do think they're going to be a 51 team, surprise a lot of people. And I do think that if they can get a five, they could probably be anybody in the Western Conference except for OKC. OKC, when they brought in Hartenstein, I was like, wow, that's Hartenstein and Alex Caruso in one offseason. What amazing addition, man. That right there really sold me. I'm actually going to go as far as say OKC. Last hot take. OKC win the championship.
OKC over Boston.
No. And in a normal sense of frame, I have Boston until otherwise, but there is a very, very, very real world where OKC wins a championship. I don't think that's that far.
30 picks they can trade over the next 7 years and a bunch of young guys that have talent don't even play on their team. Like, they have so much value.
And if they win a championship, I mean, they'll be like 2 or 3 years ahead of schedule at that point. But like Shea looked amazing last year in the playoffs, and I was actually very surprised how he looked against
I think he's going to win MVP this year, Shea. His, like, we're talking about like so many players shooting threes now. Look at Shea's mechanics on his jumper from three. Yes. His shot looks even smoother in preseason than it did in the playoffs just a few months ago. So I think SGA is going to be shooting more threes instead of those deep mid-rangers. And he still can take mid-range, of course. He can do everything. I just think we're going to see an even more evolved version of SGA this year. Jalen Williams should be better. Chet should be better after they had some up and downs in the playoffs. And OKC, like, they can go get anybody. Like, anybody who becomes available, they can go get that guy. They can make the best offer if they want to. And OKC proved before, Presti, when Paul George was available from the Pacers and he wanted to go to LA, Presti said, no, screw that. We're going to make the offer that Indiana wants. And he got Paul George, and Paul George ended up re-signing. So they can go out and get anybody, even if that player says, no, I want to go to New York, or I want to go to Miami, or I want to go to LA. OKC has the assets to say, no, he's ours. Like, we're going to go get that guy.
Yep. I genuinely believe, and I don't think they're going to make a trade or anything like that, but I do think that the way that the team is built right now, it's just so well-rounded, so great. They also have cap flexibility because, like, I think, I don't even think Shea is making 40 yet. I think 40 is like later on. I think he's still in the 30s. They have cap flexibility, so they can bring back Caruso. Like, nothing is really going to change for them. Like, they are in great standings and many capacities. And I agree, J-Dub and Chet, that leap that they're going to make is going to be the difference maker for them.
Well, Lo, you mentioned Dalton Connect. I have an interview with him coming up next after we let you go. Where can we find your stuff?
Wow, that's crazy.
What should I ask him? What should I ask Dalton Connect?
Oh man, don't get too nasty, but you should genuinely ask him. How many minutes do you think he's going to get? And does he? Oh, I was going to ask a Bronny question. That would be crazy. Ask him how many minutes does he think Bronny's going to play in this upcoming season.
That'll be the clip that goes on social media, right?
Ask him how's he going to feel when Bronny names get called out first off the bench before his in the opening night, just so Bronny and LeBron can play basketball together and you're sitting at the end of the bench and not getting any PT for the first game. What are those combos like in the locker room between Bronny and LeBron? What is that like?
Just like I get like 20 minutes of them, just spend the whole 20 minutes asking about Bronny, right?
If you really want the views to go crazy, just ask Bronny questions to any Laker player, and man, those are gonna go crazy. But I do wonder what it's like to just play around with like AD and LeBron, because I do think like it has to be like everything that happens with the Lakers has to be a circus, and I'm pretty sure you're never ever prepared for that, especially with someone like LeBron is playing there. Yeah, no one is.
No doubt about it. Where can we find your stuff, Lo?
Shout out to Kevin O'Connor. Thank you for having me. Legend of Winning on Twitter, The Low Post on YouTube, and I stream NBA games basically every single night, all throughout the regular season and throughout the postseason on playback.tv/Lowe's Room. And again, thank y'all for having me, man. Thank you. It's been great.
Appreciate it, Lo. Thank you so much for coming on. Before we get to my interview with Dalton Connect, let's open up the mailbag. You guys sent in a ton of questions. I always ask for video questions and audio questions. We got a lot of them this week. Send them over at kocshow@yahoosports.com for next week. But let's get started with this week's mailbag with a question from JD from Poland.
Hey, KOC. This is JD from Poland. I'm so happy you got the recognition of having your own show now. My question is, in every new season prediction, there's one thing that is always missing to me, which is, who could be the opposite of a dark horse? Meaning a team that everybody now thinks that they're going to be a contender, but then when you look at the standings mid of the season, they're not there anymore. They're not a factor. Of course, except for injuries. I wonder who could be your candidate.
JD, really good question. Let's look at the odds for this, because we have the BetMGM championship odds on the screen right now. Celtics are the favorites, of course. OKC at +500. I would not say either of those teams will be out of championship contention. I don't think it'll be the Knicks. I don't think it'll be the Sixers. I think it's going to be one of these next two teams on the list, the Nuggets or the Mavericks, if it's a Western Conference team. Look, I think Denver, you have the best player in basketball in Jokic, but there's so many different questions about that supporting cast. Do they have enough shooting? Is Russell Westbrook going to be a detriment to that team like he has been at each of his last couple stops? And with Dallas, I talked about this on the podcast before. Their offseason additions. You got Najee Marshall. You got Quentin Grimes. You got Klay Thompson. You got Spencer Dinwiddie. These guys could help in theory, but Najee Marshall only shot the ball well last season. Klay Thompson, Warriors fans are kind of glad he's gone for good reason. He's fallen off defensively. He's become more inconsistent as a shooter. Are these guys actually going to help Luka and Kyrie get back? And not only that, there's questions about, you know, Kyrie's health. He was very healthy last season, still broke down late in the playoffs. Is he going to be anywhere as healthy this season? So I think of these two teams, I'd lean towards Dallas as the team that's the opposite of a dark horse, that they're the team that could end up falling out of the conversation. I hate to say that because I love Luka. I love Derek Lively. I love a lot of the guys on this team, but I think I'm going to lean towards them rather than Denver, considering Denver's actually done it before. Let's move on to a question from Stu about Scoot Henderson.
So I'm Stu from the UK. I've got a double-headed question for you. So we actually met in Summer League after you got done interviewing Scoot Henderson. And at that Summer League, I was giving reports back to the UK to my friends saying that Scoot was a can't-miss prospect. Now, this was based on his game. It's, I think, one game that he played. But he looked amazing. So my question, firstly, to you is, am I long-term going to get proven right, or am I going to have to continually hear my friends reminding me of my misguided fandom?
Thank you, Stu. I do actually remember that. I think it was at the hotel lobby by the conference rooms when we met after the interview. I appreciate you saying hello. I always like when people say hello. As for Scoot, I think you're going to continue hearing it from your friends. Look, young, small guards like Scoot Henderson often take a lot of time. His final 12 games of last season, he showed signs of life. He looked much better. He averaged 19.3 points over those last 12 games. It's encouraging. He had eight, but he was a negative on defense still. The Blazers are 2-10 in those games. He had 8.3 turnovers, assists per game, but he also had 5.3 turnovers per game. He still has been turnover prone. And even though he shot almost 40% from three over that stretch, he was also still only 44% from two. And he had the same types of ups and downs in the preseason for Portland. I like Scoot. I think he's going to be a solid player in his career. He works hard. He's going to do everything he can to become the best player he possibly can. But your friends are saying that to you based off the assumption that he's a can't-miss point guard, therefore one of the best players in the league, one of the best guards in the league. I don't think Scoot's going to reach that point. So I would say your friends are going to continue being on your ass about him. Sorry. Let's move on to EJ with a voicemail.
So on last week's episode, you and Tom mentioned Phoenix as being a team that needs to come out of the gate swinging, you know, lest they end up having a fire sale at the trade deadline. And as a part of that, you guys mentioned Phoenix's plans for Yusuf Nurkic and, you know, turning him into a shooter and essentially making him the key to unlocking this five-out lineup. I don't know. As a long-suffering Portland fan, we kind of saw this in 2022-2023 where he more than doubled his three-point output. He went from 26% to 36% efficiency. But his overall scoring went down, you know, despite playing on a worse team with more opportunity. You know, his rebounding went down. I don't know. I think the copium coming out of the Phoenix fan base and, you know, whatever posturing is coming out of Phoenix's organization, it just seems completely silly that people are still clinging on to this idea that Yusuf Nurkic in year 12 or whatever it is going to figure something out that he hasn't been able to figure out before.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Nurkic, it's a serious concern. Because with Phoenix, they check a lot of the boxes that you're looking for across the roster. They have the star power. They have Book. They have KD. Beal, despite his ups and downs, is still a really good player. They added Trey Jones. They got their point guard. I love Ryan Dunn. I don't know how many times he's been mentioned on this podcast already. They have good supporting role players. Royce O'Neal, Grayson Allen, even Monty Morris coming off the bench as well. But the center spot, Nurkic and Mason Plumlee, as your backup veteran, and Bol Bol, who's not very good, there's major questions there. To me, I don't believe in Nurkic. I think he's a regular season player, not a playoff player. Mason Plumlee is not the guy for them. It's going to have to be their rookie, Oso Iguodoro. We saw last year with the Dallas Mavericks, they were able to make it to the playoff, into the finals with Derek Lively as their better center option rather than Daniel Gafford. Maybe for the Suns, that's going to have to be the case with Iguodaro. I'm a believer in him. He's a playmaker. Suns fans know this watching him just in preseason. His feel and passing ability, it is like the opposite end of the spectrum from what you experience with DeAndre Ayton, where he'd hold the ball and turn and record scratch the offense. Iguodaro is somebody who can make quick decisions. Hopefully he can figure out that jumper, not a certainty there, but he's versatile defensively. I'm a believer in him. I think he's going to have to be the guy at the center spot for the Suns, but at the same time, like, it's a lot to hope for a rookie to be able to get that done. Nurkic to me is just more of that regular season placeholder, but for the playoffs, it's going to have to be Iguodaro. Let's go on to a question from Trey.
KOC, what's up, man? This is Trey, Portland, Oregon. Long time follower of your work, bro. Appreciate you. Here's my question, brother. I'm hoping, especially now that you're over here with Yahoo, that maybe you can do a little fantasy basketball flashpoint weekly or every other week. Help a brother out, man. I run a league called the Oreo Invitational because I'm light-skinned and I invited everybody. And I'm trying to dominate, baby. It's a keeper league. And I would love some feedback. So, will you give some fantasy basketball feedback or bring on some of your colleagues to do so? Can't wait to hear about it. Peace.
Good question. Brought on Titus last week. I thought we had a really great episode together. We'll definitely be bringing Titus back on. We'll have a fantasy corner. It's a really good idea. But just to give you some of my fantasy sleepers, I got my fantasy draft on Monday night. So these are the guys that I have on my list. Nobody's going to know this list because this podcast comes out afterwards. But some of my guys that I like with their average draft position compared to how I value them, I got Grady Dick in Toronto. I think he showed a lot of potential with his enhanced role. He had more plays run for him, more shots above the break. He also did more than just shoot for them, more attacking the basket. Maybe we'll see more pick and roll over the course of the season. Donovan Clingan, rookie with the Blazers. If DeAndre Ayton's moved at any point, you're going to see a big uptick in role for him. He can also shoot threes potentially for them. Keontae George, second-year guard with the Jazz. I think he's going to have a bigger opportunity as well. Danny Avdia, another Blazer, could put up big numbers for them as well. Somebody's going to be scoring. Somebody's going to be getting buckets. But he's also a steals and blocks guy, rebounds guy. He fills the box score if you're playing categories. Dante DiVincenzo, he's my sixth man of the year pick. This year in Minnesota, he basically ran point guard off their bench. Mike Conley is 50 years old at this point. Maybe DiVincenzo gets even a bigger role as the year progresses. So I think those guys come to mind as well. Bam Adebayo shooting threes from Miami now. Tobias Harris, he's a steal every single year because he just puts up stats, even though he doesn't necessarily contribute to winning. And now he plays for Detroit. Those are some of the guys that I have in mind as kind of these value picks in terms of ADP that I'm going to be looking at in my draft tonight. So maybe in next Monday's episode, I'll talk about what I actually ended up landing. But good idea, Trey. And we'll definitely be doing some fantasy corner stuff over the course of the season. You're right. It's Yahoo. How can we not? Let's move on to a question from Philip.
So I got a prediction for you. Thinking maybe this year, Popovich, Wemby, and Paul start making some noise and creep into the top six. So I think come trade deadline, they're going to swing something big for maybe a Jimmy Butler, Kevin Durant, somebody along those lines. What do you think?
Why not a De'Aaron Fox? I said it earlier in the podcast that maybe this is the year the Kings start looking around for trades, or maybe De'Aaron Fox starts looking around for another team. De'Aaron Fox, a native of Texas. He grew up near Houston, about a couple hours away from San Antonio. So maybe for him, he might be looking for a homecoming. But I mean, we'll see. The Spurs, it also would depend a lot on what they see in Stephon Castle. Do they see Castle, who they drafted in the lottery, as more of a Andre Iguodala type? Or do they see him as more of a true point guard? So I think for the Spurs, this is more likely an evaluation year. I don't know if they're going to go all in for a trade this year. To me, it's more next summer. So I think you might be a little bit ahead of schedule. But then again, Victor Wembanyama is ahead of schedule. I believe he's already one of the 10 best players in basketball. I think by the end of the season, he could be one of the 5 best players if he continues on this ascent. So maybe the Spurs will accelerate things because Victor Wembanyama is so special, they'll have no other choice but to do that. Let's go on to a question from Caleb.
How realistic is that in your mind of a team like the Hornets finishing above the Hawks? And if I could sneak in, what do you think about the Pistons potentially finishing above the Hawks as well?
Good questions there. I mean, I think with Atlanta, I think they're going to be fun. I think Atlanta is going to be a really, really fun team. They're playing faster. Trey is embracing playing in more motion. Maybe over the course of the season, if guys like Jalen Johnson are putting up all-star numbers and Risa Shea is looking good and Kobe Bufkin is making progress in his second year, maybe Trey even embraces that more in this Quinn Snyder offense. So I think there's a chance that the Hawks are actually pretty good. And picking the Hornets or Pistons above them, Hornets maybe. Maybe LaMelo has another all-star caliber season. Brandon Miller has an all-star caliber season. They have depth. If Mark Williams comes back, he has really made them a good defense in recent years, despite having, you know, not good teams. But Detroit, no. Like, I don't think Detroit has any chance to be better than Atlanta this year. To me, the Hawks have too many good players. They have a better star in Trae Young. Cade Cunningham still needs to prove that he can shoot threes off the dribble. He's been highly inconsistent from deep range. I just don't believe in Detroit and being any better than like a 25 win team this coming season. So no, I would not pick Detroit over Atlanta. Hornets, maybe, but I think I'd take Atlanta slightly over them. Let's go on to a question from Micah, our final question in this week's mailbag.
Hey, KOC. My name's Micah, and I'm from Southern Virginia. Huge fan of the show. I have a question about the Denver Nuggets. Hypothetically, say they start the season 20-18, and Jamal Murray starts the season out of shape, slow, sluggish, and the whole team's just kind of out of whack. What do you think the potential of the Denver Nuggets blowing up their roster in a sort, i.e. trading Jamal Murray and or potentially trading Michael Porter Jr.?
Well, I mean, I think for Denver, they have to make some move at some point. You look at the way this team has taken steps back with their supporting cast. You lose Bruce Brown 2 years ago. You lose KCP this year. So they're in a position now where their depth has been depleted. They need their young guys to really take steps forward. Julian Strother, who they drafted last year out of Gonzaga, I was very high on him. I wrote the story on the Nuggets before the season about their plan to build a dynasty, investing in youth, Peyton Watson, Christian Brown, Julian Strother, Hunter Tyson, all these guys. They need their young guys to get better. And they need those young guys to get better for two reasons. So they can help the team as currently constructed, but also potentially to be those trade assets. Otherwise, the trade assets are the players you mentioned, Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. or even Aaron Gordon, having to flip somebody who's an important part of the core. So I don't think Denver is going to be a blow it up team in the rebuild sense, but maybe they're kind of like a targeted demolition team in terms of trading one of their key players. But that would mean that the young guys don't get better. I think Strother's going to be better this year. I have questions about Christian Brown with his shooting ability. I don't think their veteran addition of Russell Westbrook is going to be all that helpful, but I don't think they're going to be a team that makes dramatic changes. Michael Porter Jr. to me would be the guy. Jamal Murray just signed his extension. They're committed to him long-term. I think they'd give that some number of years, but MPJ is the guy who could be expendable within the context of this offense. So MPJ, maybe. But if MPJ gets traded, maybe that's for a mix of other smaller salaries, and maybe that ends up being beneficial for them. So I think MPJ would be the guy that they could trade, but that doesn't qualify as blow it up or anything like that. That's more like just a trade to shuffle the deck. I don't even think that's anything major. That's just something that could make sense for Denver to do. You can't, just because you won a championship with that guy doesn't mean you can become complacent and stick to it. Sometimes the best teams need to make those big moves, those tough decisions, and MPJ could very well end up being the most valuable asset. And by the way, if Strother's really good for Denver this year, he's going to be that guy that adds some element of shooting, which could make MPJ at his $35 million salary somewhat expendable for them. So maybe we see that move happened. Thank you, everybody, for sending in your season prediction mailbag questions. We'll be back again next week with another mailbag. And so just send them over to kocshow@yahoosports.com. Next week will be more first impressions and whatnot. So I'm going to want to know your early season takeaways, what you're thinking about from the first week of game. So send those over at kocshow@yahoosports.com. And as always, video and audio questions are preferred. So the video version of this podcast, you can see and hear what you guys are saying, but we will take some written questions as well. And sometimes I just reply to those as well, even if we don't use them on the show. It's always nice to get you guys' feedback and your questions. Now I'm here with Lakers rookie Dalton Connect. Dalton, what's going on today, man?
I'm just chilling. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate you joining me. So Snoop Dogg called you West Side Connect. Do you approve of this new nickname?
I approve it. You know, Connect 4 was cool, but I think West Side Connect is better.
But you can't lose Connect 4. You chose the number 4. Like, you, yeah, clearly that was part of the game plan.
I know, I might have to do a debate on Instagram or Twitter or something like that to see what the fans like.
You must be a fan of dad jokes then to choose Connect 4, right? Or is that call was that?
That was me and my dad's favorite game growing up.
Connect 4. You were number 3 though most of the time. And
oh yeah, 3 was my number. Yeah.
Oh, well, as we saw in your 35-point game though, clearly for you, where you are Connect 3 in different ways as well. Of course, AD has that number. What for you in that 35-point game, you score the final 20 points for the Lakers. I think it reminded me of your Tennessee season. Earlier in the career, you had some up and down games, and then things clicked for you at North Carolina. What happens when you get off to some of those sluggish starts, and then suddenly the ball just starts going through the net? Like what worked for you in that game?
To be honest, it was just like I got in the zone. I just felt like my shots were was getting really good looks at the beginning, and they were just falling. And then my teammates kept giving me the ball, so I just kept shooting. Like I said in my post game, I was just out there hooping, and I didn't care who was guarding me. Just going out there and hooping at the end of the day.
So it's not like you feel like you're getting adjusted. It's not like something clicks for you. It's just getting in the zone. That's it.
Yeah, all I need is like 2 makes, and I feel like I'm in the zone every time. Something about it.
I see. So has it been like that for you throughout your life? Like, because you've had different stops throughout your career. You were kind of a late bloomer in high school. You had a late growth spurt. You go to junior college for your freshman and sophomore year. You're in Northern Colorado for your junior and senior year. And there, it's like you averaged 8.9 points per game as a junior and then 20.2 points per game as a senior before transferring to Tennessee. So like with you, like it's not like the first time that you've experienced kind of this sudden leap.
Yeah, I think I've always felt like that. It's just a matter of I've just been underrated, I feel like, my whole entire life. I graduated high school at 6'3", 170. So like, you know, college guys weren't going to recruit a kid that was like that. So I spent some time at junior college, grew 3 more inches and gained about 25 pounds in 2 years. So then, yeah, went to Northern Colorado, went there, got a little rough season, injuries and stuff like that. Then my senior year, found my groove, and then obviously we saw what happened at Tennessee. So that it was just a blessing to have, you know, my type of journey.
You said you were 6'3", 170 when you graduated high school?
Yeah.
And what are you now?
6'6", 215.
Okay, so with you in high school, were you playing more point, or were you like kind of like a undersized 2 guard at the time?
Yeah, I was like a combo. I was a point guard most of the time, and then occasionally I go to the undersized shooting guard.
Now, I feel like with you, if somebody's watching your game today, they're like, oh, Dalton is like all scorer, scorer, scorer. Like, he shoot, shoot, shoot. He's not much of a playmaker. But you can run a little bit of pick and roll. We saw that at Tennessee. You can pass the ball when necessary. How would you describe kind of like how you balance between approaching scoring versus playmaking? Because like my sense is that your head coach, JJ Redick, has empowered you to like look for your shot, and the passing is more secondary at this point.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, obviously when I come off of like an action or something, obviously it's a shoot or go get a bucket or do that type of thing. And then if I don't have a good look at it, it's just use my playmaking skill to go find one of my teammates and help them get an opportunity to go score.
Now, the Lakers, they're running a lot of ghost screens and inverted screens involving LeBron and AD. Well, what's your comfort level in those types of actions as opposed to some of the off-ball actions that we've seen you used?
Yeah, we did a lot of ghosts at Northern Colorado, so I feel real comfortable doing that thing. And I, you know, me and JJ talked about that throughout the summer with some ghosting screens with obviously Braun as the main guy to do that. So, and I feel real comfortable in the offense, and it's kind of like a free flow type offense. So it's really good that you have the freedom to go do whatever you want.
Do you feel like it's an advantage for you to have, you know, one of the greatest shooters ever as your head coach when it comes to installing all these different layers and these types of actions for you, like early on in your career? Like, you're doing a lot. It's not just you're spotting up in the corner as a young player. Is that in part for like JJ Redick, like helping install those actions specifically for you?
Yeah, it's real good that, you know, like you said, JJ is the head coach. He's a shooter, one of the best shooters in NBA history. So, you know, having him out there as my coach, he knows and understands as a shooter where I'm seeing the floor and stuff like that. But also I watched him at all the time in college with Coach Barnes at Tennessee and stuff. So it's good just, you know, instead of asking giving him a text or something, now it's in person. Like, hey, after practice, I'll ask him a question. He's always super helpful and stuff like that. So it's really good that, you know, JJ sees the floor how I see it.
What's an example of something you asked him and he gave you some helpful advice?
Just like how he creates separation before he gets to the screen. Like if his guy's pressing up onto him, how to create that space from the jump and then create even more separation when you're coming off of a screen. So just that little bit of like that split seconds is going to help you no matter what.
Was there a specific play in the preseason that you utilized that on the floor, or has that not come up yet?
I would say almost every time I come off of a screen, off-ball screen is when it comes, like, just that, or especially at top of the key where I'm getting a screen from, like, our bigs, and they try to top-block the screen, and I'll just sort of get over it or just go under.
Do you expect to have, I mean, obviously, like, you're sharing the court with LeBron James and Anthony Davis and, like, a lot of proven veteran players that are going to have the ball in their hands a ton, but with Tennessee, I thought it was interesting how over the course of the season, it felt like Coach Barnes and the Volunteers empowered you more and more and more to just be the guy running the show, running pick and roll. With the Lakers, you have that in your bag. You have the ability to hit pull-ups. You have the ability to run pick and roll. How are you balancing kind of the growth behind the scenes, improving as a ball handler versus what your role is on the court right now with a lot of off-ball actions, a lot of screening right now with what you're doing actually for the Lakers team versus the behind-the-scenes development?
Yeah, I think it's kind of easy because, you know, I get to play with LeBron and AD. Those guys are going to create tons of easy looks for me throughout that throughout the whole entire season and stuff. But Tennessee, we did a lot of off-ball stuff. Especially when I first got there, it was a lot of off-ball movement. So it's kind of just kind of like a refreshment of learning the off-ball game and finding those type of looks and finding those windows for Bron and AD to find me out there.
What has been your favorite part about living in LA so far?
Favorite part? I'd say the weather. The weather's always just super nice. So I'd say the weather. Can't say the traffic or probably the earthquakes. I don't like the earthquakes and stuff.
Yeah, we've had a few of them in the last couple of months. They scare you?
Oh, yeah. That first happened, I didn't know what was going on. I was scared.
Your house or apartment rattling over, like it's stuff falling over? What made you scared?
Oh, yeah. I called my mom instantly. I called her. I was like, yo, the house is shaking.
I mean, I think you get used to them, but at the same time, like I remember my first time I was in a ninth floor of an apartment and like the guitars started swinging. They were hanging on my walls. I was like, huh, what's going on? And I stood up. I'm like, wait a second, earthquake. Like the first one is terrifying. So you get used to them a little bit, but at the same time, there's always that lingering fear of the big one coming.
Oh yeah, I'm terrified.
Well, I mean, hopefully the weather makes up for it. Like, have you met any celebrities besides LeBron and I guess Bronny as well? Have you met any celebrities in LA so far?
Yeah, I saw Bruno Mars one time at dinner. He was just sitting in a booth and I walked by him. It's like, it's Bruno Mars. So that was probably the most famous person I've met so far. That was really cool.
Have you, what kind of restaurants have you gone to? Any favorites so far? There's so much good food in LA.
Yeah, there's so much. I'm trying to still figure it out. got a couple of friends that live out here that I've been texting on what places to go. I would say Joey's is one of them. Been at Joey's. And just any kind of steakhouse, really. I really like steakhouses and stuff. So I try to go to as many of those as I can.
Now, you've said before Kevin Durant is your GOAT. Has your mind changed?
I mean, KD's my favorite player, but, you know, obviously you give Bron his props. So I think, you know, they're not just one GOAT. There's just multiple GOATs. You know, Bron's a GOAT of mine, too. Yeah, KD, you know, it's cool to play in front of both of those guys.
So, I mean, it's like, I think you're right. Like, there's different GOATs for different types of people and players. Like, your GOAT is the player you feel is more in your mold or your style, exactly. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are some things that you've really admired about Kevin Durant's game that you've tried to install into your own game?
The pace and, I guess, pace into the games or coming, like, into actions and stuff like that. And obviously, his shooting ability to whatever, like, no matter what, he's a threat anywhere when he steps out on that court. And I try to do that as well. And I actually texted KD a couple times and texted him some questions about just some things I had to ask. And he was super helpful, texting me right away and was just like, yo, do this. I do this. Like, you see this defender, do that, stuff like that. So he's just been super helpful. And it's real cool that, you know, the guy I looked up to as a basketball player is a fan of my game, so he's texting me and helping me grow my game.
I mean, well, you said something that reminded me. I interviewed Victor Wembanyama earlier this year, and he said he loves KD's kind of pace in those off-ball actions. Like, he has those slight hesitations to throw the defender off, and that seems to be what you're alluding to. So I think, like, Kevin Durant, you're texting with him. You got J.J. Redick as a head coach. You have all these different people who can help you maximize your game. Do you feel fortunate in that regard, like, for where you landed, the situation that you're in with the type of mentors that you have, and LeBron James being able to deliver the ball in so many different types of actions, or AD and dribble handoffs and whatnot?
Yeah, I feel super blessed that, you know, I came to a great spot. Besides living in LA, it's great that I got the teammates around me. You know, I got D'Lo and AR, besides Bron and AD, that have been super helpful as our two main point guards. Then you got tons of young guys, you know, me and Bronny coming in every single day since we got drafted. So it's been real good just to, you know, be with all those guys and, you know, ultimately start learning from LeBron and AD, just learning how they, like, prep themselves for the season, after games. You get to see all the behind-the-scenes stuff that they that people really don't see.
You mentioned Bronny. We're doing this interview for Call of Duty Black Ops 6, which is out on October 25th. Bronny, of course, this summer league, he won the competition that Call of Duty holds with all the NBA players. Have you played COD with Bronny at all this preseason?
I'm not the best at it. And, you know, Bronny won the whole entire thing, and he's told me that he plays in real sweaty lobby. So I stay away from him. I stay away from that because I don't need I'm not that good at it, so I just got to stay away. But I'm going to hopefully here soon get back into it and hopefully play against Bronny and ultimately win.
I mean, playing against Bronny in Call of Duty, I don't like your chances. See, the dude's like professional.
I don't like my chances either. That's why we got to wait. We got to wait a couple years.
I mean, on the court, different story. I'm picking you know, every time. But in the Call of Duty lobbies, that's a different thing.
Yeah, Bronny's unbelievable. You got to be in Call of Duty for sure.
Bronny's unbelievable. And then LeBron, apparently a top 100 Madden ranked player. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's crazy. I've heard that he was good, but I didn't know he was that good at Madden. So that was surprising. Same with Anthony David. Both of those guys, they'd be on Madden a lot.
It's crazy to me that arguably the greatest basketball player of all time could also be one of the greatest Madden players on the entire planet.
That's just crazy to think about it.
Yeah. With Call of Duty, are you more of a multiplayer or Warzone guy?
I'd say multiplayer. You know, I like playing with all my boys back home and stuff, and especially my teammates at Tennessee, we played a lot. So I'd say, you know, I played a lot of times, but I wasn't, you know, I was just out there and play with them.
LeBron had posted on X that he wants to get a avatar, a character for Bronny James in the game. Is that also your career goal, to have a character in Call of Duty of your face?
Oh yeah, I think that'd be real cool to have that. That would definitely make me, you know, hopefully become a sweat and be up to Bronny's level.
An NBA championship or Call of Duty character joining Kevin Durant and Devin Booker.
I think I got to take the NBA championship.
Good choice.
I think I got to take that one.
Give LA a parade. Well, Dalton, I appreciate you joining me today on behalf of Call of Duty Black Ops 6.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Best of luck this season, man. I think you're going to crush it. I'm looking forward to watching you play.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys listening to today's loaded episode. We had Low. We had your mailbag. And we had Dalton Connect, who was tremendous. Appreciated having him on. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thank you to our producer, John, and everybody who works behind the scenes for making it happen. Please give the show a 5-star rating no matter where you're listening. Please subscribe. It really does help out. Appreciate listening. Enjoy the NBA season, everybody.